Morning, Charles.
Morning, sir.
Oh, Tony, are you working on the forms of that street
yes,
vendor
Captain.
Incident up on... Tony? Tony? Tony, I don't want to intrude, but you seem a little down.
Well, Captain, it's about my job. You know, I'm having doubts about being a cop. You know, it's not like how it is on TV. I mean, all I do all day is I fill out forms and paperwork. I mean, this is what I do.
It's a point well taken, Tony, but you must understand, although it's not exciting, it's a very important part of our work.
Yeah, but in all my times as a cop, I've never like chased a guy across a crowded city square. I've never hung on to that part of the helicopter. You know that part underneath the thing where it lands? Do you know that
yes,
part?
Yes, I know that part.
I've never hung on to that. I've never even commandeered a vehicle.
Now that sounds like a lot of fun.
And that's the other thing. You're too nice.
I'm too nice?
Yes, you're too nice. Why can't you be like the captain on Starsky and Hutch? You know, where you come in and you haul me into your office and you bawl me out because you're sick and tired of defending my screwball antics to the commissioner? Why can't you do that?
Well, the truth of the matter is I don't report to a commissioner. I report to a committee, some of whom are appointed, some elected, and the rest co-opted on a biannual basis. It's a quorum, so to speak.
A quorum?
Yeah.
Captain, when I joined the police force, I thought that I was going to be Serpico, but instead, I'm like fish from Barney Miller.
Hey, somebody needs a hug.
Captain.
It's a party fucking environment right now. We're all tooling around in a, you know, it's a rag top right now. So, can you hear the wind? Can you hear the wind?
Rag top.
You know I'm a rag top man.
I tell everybody that about you.
Thank you.
People are like, oh, what's...
I feel like every once in a while I like am talking to somebody politely and I'm like, they don't even know that I'm a rag top man. How do I continue this conversation?
Yeah, people...
It's fucking ridiculous.
A lot of times we'll be like, what's it like being friends with Nate? And I'll be like, well, first and foremost, he's a rag top man.
First off, he's a rag top man, which you need to understand.
Get that through your fucking head or don't even try to be friends with the guy.
A Hill to Die On, Volume 1, the early films of Walter Hill. That's what we've been listening to all fucking month. This is the end of it. We've reached the end. This is a celebration, bitches.
So, yeah.
We've watched so much Walter Hill. We've climbed a fucking hill of our own.
To everybody that doesn't enjoy the works of Walter Hill.
This has been bad for you,
I guess. It's been bad for you.
He's great, though. And if you look at our ratings, though, he's kind of middle of the road. But he's got a reputation as being great.
Yeah.
Are we sacrilegious? Are we taking a religion and sacrileging it? Is that what's going on?
I don't know how religion works.
I don't know. I don't either. I just know we've watched 3 Walter Hill movies. I've given them honest ratings, and I still like Walter Hill going into this fourth thing. So
I know that this is Baby Oil and Blow.
What boys like.
Is a
I know
action
what guys want.
Podcast.
They want to touch
to
me.
The stars.
I never let them.
It was the waiters or the waitresses?
The waitresses. That was who was saying that one.
I'm more of a Christmas rap fan. Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas, Merry do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Is that another waitresses doing?
Yeah, that's their Christmas song.
Oh, wow. I did not know that they were more than a one-trick pony.
I think they have another song, too.
Erroneous.
Yeah.
There's no way. There's no fucking way.
We're not here to talk songs. We're here to talk
movies.
Well, we talk songs, though, too.
My bad.
But, yeah, Baby Oil and Blow. It's your hosts as usual.
That's right. I'm your black guy to your white guy.
That's right.
I'm Nate Adams. Oh, 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 everybody.
Yep. And I'm going to play the role of Matt O this week.
I dribbled on my crotch.
You dribbled it? Yeah, well.
There was more in there than I thought there was.
Yeah. You've been drinking some drinks today. Usually I'm the...
All day.
A little more...
All day.
Lubricated of the two, but you're feeling
tonight.
No pain today. That's
Not
good.
Tonight.
As I drink some fine bourbon.
You want to get into the main attraction of today's podcast?
I'm pretty go with the flow, so
all right,
we could do whatever the fuck we want.
Let's get into the rundown this week of the last week of A Hill to Die On, Volume 1, the early films of Walter Hill. Walter Films, a lot of hills out in those hills.
This one takes place in the hills of San Francisco.
We've talked about four of them. This is the fourth. We're in the hills of San Francisco. God damn it. San Francisco is an annoying town to try to get around.
Yeah.
They don't have great public transportation.
No.
Walking sucks because of the hills. Like, thank Christ there's Uber now.
Full House tells me they have a beautiful trolley system.
You look ever. That's the thing. Google fucking Maps tried to tell me to legit get on the trolley where I needed to go.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just like, oh no, the trolley is a fake thing only for tourists. Don't get on it. It's not real. It was like, it's a legit form of transportation. It's the easiest way you can get from A to B. So I tried to.
Yeah.
And then literally, you can walk faster than the trolley. And I was like, well, this was a scam.
I'm going to get off.
This should not be on Google Maps. Like, Google Maps, you have fucked me.
A lot of people just don't like to walk.
Luckily, Pete Fisher, shout out, lives out in Oakland. So he was able to show up and just cart me around
back
for
down.
A little bit. Yeah. So we went to some trash bars. Everybody out there has their Dobermans on the bar floor. Just they take their Dobermans into the bar.
Okay.
And then their Dobermans bump into each other and like they start barking a lot and it's chaos. Hmm. So
It's like a Snoop Dogg video.
This week's fucking rundown is brought to you by not bringing your fucking dog to the bar because it's chaos. One person can do it. Two people can't. If four people do it, it's nonsense. Your dogs don't belong in the bar. Keep your dogs at home.
Aforementioned Jimmy likes to show up with his dogs periodically.
That's what I'm saying, though. Like, this is a small town bar. Like, there's no other dogs in there.
His
dogs are
tiny. Small town.
I don't like it, but I'll accept it.
I wasn't born in San Francisco.
Thank you, Bar Dad Jimmy. 48 Hours is from the year 1972.
I think it's 82, but agree to disagree.
Oh, yeah, 1982. I've got written 72 on my notes here. That's a typo.
I'm here for you.
Runtime, 96 minutes. I don't think that's a typo.
Nope, that one's accurate.
Director Walter Hill. That's got to be true, because we've been talking about that a lot.
Yep.
The stars. Nick Nolte.
Hell yeah.
He's like the biggest star in the 80s. But then he did a lot of drugs. And then he was like nobody in the 90s and the 2000s.
Well, yeah.
Not quite Gary Busey. Is that how I can describe him?
That's a very...
I mean, Gary Busey went out onto that extra ledge on the end. Nick Nolte inched up very close behind him, but didn't quite get there.
And he's like, you know what? People aren't giving me movies anymore. I'm just going to lay low for a minute.
Something, though. We got a buddy cop comedy. So who's his buddy? His buddy is Eddie Murphy. SNL made him famous. He's a comedian. He's a loud guy. He's got a very familiar laugh. Matt, what's that laugh sound like? That's the one. Holy shit. He did this, then he did Beverly Hills Cop, because this was famous, then he became the biggest star in Hollywood.
This was his film debut,
And then he decided, like, I'm too pretentious, I'm never going to try to be funny again.
So I'm sorry, like, you never saw Nash Pluto?
Years. So, like, the last 30 years has been like, no, I'm not gonna be funny, I don't care for it.
I read and heard some interviews about Eddie Murphy.
Tell me a little bit about Eddie Murphy
and
now.
His friends say he stopped being funny because he just lost any and all touch with humans.
I mean...
like, he just was making so much money.
Like it,
and was just living in such a bubble. Kind of like a Michael Jackson. Yeah.
Like, yeah, just pump me full of narcotics type thing.
He didn't know what was funny anymore because, you know...
I'm not going to lie. That sounds like the way I'd go if I was famous. Like, tell me how good I am. Pump me full of drugs. Yeah. Sounds great to me.
Yep. Just count money.
Bad guys. We got James Remar. He's a Walter Hill fucking regular at this point, Matt. We've been dealing with him for a while.
That's very true.
Ajax in The Warriors.
He showed up
guy
in three of our four films.
Guy who gets in a knife fight in fucking The Long Riders.
Yep.
Now he's playing the bad guy, the main bad guy. He's upgraded. He's
Albert Gaze.
He looks
or something along
he looks
those
great.
Lines.
He's looking better and better every movie we see him. He's got a fucking bit of muscle, though, and he's got Sonny Landham as his muscle. Who's Sonny Landham? He's fucking Billy from Predator. You know Billy from fucking
Billy.
Predator. What's the matter, Billy? And what's he playing in this movie? He's playing Billy again.
Yeah.
And also, we got fucking David Patrick Kelly in this movie being one of their goons. He's playing Luther.
Again.
He was also Luther in The Warriors. These people must be so goddamn stupid. Walter Hill's just like, I love him. I want him to be in my movies. But like, if I try to call them by a different name, they're
going
to be too stupid to look up and like acknowledge what I'm doing. Yeah. I just got to call them the names I want to say. So, Billy, you're Billy. Luther, you're fucking Luther. Let's just go with it. Let's just go with it. And it worked. God damn, did it work.
Worked great.
Tagline of this movie.
We got a love interest. You're not going to give any love to Annette
O'Toole. Looks very hot at a young age, but she has no reason to be in this movie, has no fucking bearing on this movie, doesn't work into the plot of this movie. Like, I'd throw her a bone in 1982. Don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. But
if she showed
not
up,
enough to throw her in my fucking
if
you
she
know, rundown of the cast.
Right now, with Tom Rock for the challenge,
when
she was like, hey.
Redheads, would I be able to tell them apart?
A little of that. But if she was like, I don't know what you guys got with this podcast challenge. I just wanted to see if you wanted a bang. You would. You would.
I don't know.
You wouldn't tell her no.
That's probably true.
There you go.
All right. You get in here, Annette O'Toole. Tagline. One cop, one con, no mercy. That's a tagline. We've been dealing with too many movies lately that have like multiple sentence taglines going on. Like, is this too wordy? It's like, no, you got to get to the point. That's cool. I get that.
Billy's got to get Susie to the prom, but his parents died from hitmen 7 weeks ago. His sister's
this is a plot synopsis.
Have
it's not
her
a tagline.
Bar mitzvah.
What is our actual plot synopsis, though? It's not even like very much longer than the fucking tagline. It's a hard-nosed cop reluctantly teams up with a wisecracking criminal temporarily paroled to him in order to track down a killer. That's it.
Pretty good.
That's it. That's everything going on. That's 48 hours from 1982, not 1972. Let's get into bullet points and where we dig into 48 hours and talk about when we watched this and the things that stood out to us, like fucking getting shot in the face with a bullet while we were watching it.
Yeah. Movie starts off strong. You don't know what's happening. But you know something's happening.
Oh, Jesus Christ, man. The opening?
Yeah.
I've got right now the first bullet point. The opening. That's what I wrote.
Yeah.
That's what I wrote.
That's a good way to remember what you were talking about.
That's what I do. I put it in bold, too, so that, like, when I'm drunk here and we're talking, that I can just easily follow what I had said before. I'm so smart.
It's all
just,
laid
like,
out nicely
think
for you.
About myself, like, later on. Like, you're not going to be very smart.
You're going to need this,
on.
Nate. Oh, thank you, Nate.
You're going to need this sort of structure.
Appreciate you looking out for me. That's why you always leave your toilet seats up before you hit the bar.
So, the opening, we're out in the middle of, like, the fucking desert or something.
Yeah.
We're out in the country, and it doesn't feel like a San Francisco movie at all. It feels completely different from the movie we're
going
to be watching. There's a chain gang going on, a bunch of fucking dudes working on a chain gang. And the first thing that this opening establishes is that this movie is going to focus on tension. We're going to build tension like a horror movie. It's going to be tense as fuck because we get a shot of this chain gang working, and then we get a shot of this jalopy fucking truck barreling down the same road they're on, and then we get a shot of the chain gang working, and then we get a shot of this jalopy just barreling down the road again. Normal movies would have shown us that like twice just to establish like that's what's going on. This movie shows it to us like 8 or 9 times.
Right.
Just to
it's getting closer.
Build it like.
It's getting closer.
Something's going to fucking happen. And when this truck hits these guys working at the side of the road, it's going to be fucking violent. You need to worry about it. You need to sit there and worry about it. So as I was sitting there, I was fucking worrying about it. And that's when you just know like, oh, I'm good hands with this movie. Like,
another,
this movie's going to be pretty fucking
another
good.
Reason it's got you tense and making you worry?
Because
the music says you should be.
Yeah,
the music's
right.
So
great
tense
music in this too.
And beautiful. and it worked so well that old boy used the same exact music at the beginning of Commando.
Mm-hmm.
He just changed it around.
Is that
a
why I liked it so
yep,
much?
It's
is
the
that,
same intro.
I'm just a man on a fucking chain gang waiting for somebody to break me out. I'm just a fucking dad out in the wilderness waiting for somebody to kidnap my daughter.
Yeah.
Same fucking vibe.
Either way,
same
it's tense,
vibe.
Man. It's fucking tense. So the score works great. It's helping move along what you're seeing on the screen. You're uneasy, and then bam, it hits. Billy Bear shows up.
Not just Billy from Predator. Now he's Billy Bear. That's fucking like a step above. He's even cooler in this movie as Billy Bear.
Yeah, that's my dog's name, Billy, and I like to reference Predator a lot to her. Uh-huh. And I also like to call her Billy Bear a lot. Yeah. So it just works on a lot of levels for me.
It's definitely working out for you a lot.
Yeah, so Billy Bear shows up and he's like, oh, my car's overheating. And Ajax from the Warriors, he's like, hey, get out of here, you dirty Native American.
Hey.
I'm a criminal, but I don't want to deal with you.
They stage a big fake fight in order to get Ajax off that chain gang and to fool all the fucking idiot, like, correctional
cops.
Officers going out there. I know that you've done this a little bit in your life.
I was a gunman on a chain gang,
and I know that if ever somebody rolled up in a jalopy truck and started screaming at you, your immediate response would not have been to just be like, oh, hey, you're my best friend. Like, I'm going to put my gun down and do whatever you want me to do.
No.
But I believed that this guy was stupid enough to let this shit go down. Because I'm like, oh, my best friend Matt, he's a great CO. Like, these are just out there in the country COs.
I'm not gonna buy that
he's dumb enough to fall for this.
I'm not a hayseed like them, Nate.
Never happened. So many trash pickups in Gary, and not once did you ever just fucking get rolled by somebody in a pickup truck rolling up.
Not once.
Props to you.
Hey, thanks.
That's how this does start, because turns out Billy Bear and Ajax are in on it together. They stage this fight. They're rolling around in the mud. It's fake, and it's just a good way to slip a gun into Ajax's hands so they can both blow away all the fucking cops.
Yeah.
And then we've got a fucking story here, because this guy was in jail and he got away, and we got dead cops, and now somebody's gonna have to deal with it. Because when you have dead cops, if there's anything an action movie's taught me, dead cops is the worst, dude. Dude, if there's dead cops, you gotta take care of that.
Yeah, action.
Can't be having dead cops around.
Action heroes can make Action heroes can make an entire action movie out of the fact that somebody killed another
cop. Build a franchise around a dead cop. No problem.
Yeah. So the best part is this action movie right here doesn't rest on its laurels. They're not like, well, we killed some prison guards, so that's reason enough for you to care. Nah, Ajax and Billy Bear fucking hit the town.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, let's get some...
instantly.
Let's get some whores.
We need to get whores
and keep
going hunting here.
And keep killing.
So we get like a good like 5 minutes where they're just on the fucking phone like ordering their whores. Like, this is the kind of whore I like. Not that kind of whore.
Yeah.
Bring me this kind of whore because that's what I like. My friend, he also likes whores.
Yeah.
This is the 80s and we're racist, so he needs the exact same race of whore as he is because he's not going to be having sex with
a filthy race trading.
Lady of the night of a different skin color.
No race trading, that's for sure.
But isn't like these guys get instantly established as just like
shit
the
heels?
Most... Yeah, the Weasley, most scumbaggy, just little sniveling, like Bobby Heenan-esque bad guys. They're fucking like, the next thing is they're banging these whores in a hotel. And this is where we first meet Nick Nolte, one of our big characters. And he's going in there with a couple of just like jackass, like normal cops who are like, hey, Nick Nolte, you're fucking a wild card. We don't want to deal with you. We're going to do this by the book. So we're going to go up and arrest them and you just stay down in the lobby and be cool.
Yeah.
But then like that by the book shit, this is an action movie. This ain't real life. So it goes nuts. Guns are firing everywhere. Like, these guys get blown away. Billy Bear and fucking Ajax, they're pulling women in front of gunshots, just like Randy Savage in peak, like, 1986 pro wrestling shit.
Right.
Just like, I hope a woman dies before I die. Yeah. So, like, you're into these, like, fucking hate these guys. They suck. They're criminals. They're scumbags. They're fucking ordering whores. And then, like, throwing them into the fucking pits to die before they die. They're selfish. They're miserable.
I want to tag on that a little bit. Fucking Sonny Landham and whatever, James Remar, they're spot on in this film.
Oh, they suck so bad.
They're so good so at bad. Being bad. Billy from Predator, we all thought the same thing watching that movie. Yeah, you know, that guy don't seem quite right. He's a little unhinged. Mm-hmm. Like, if you say he's a good guy, I'll take your word
for it. Yeah.
Here, he's doing the exact same thing, except he doesn't have to.
Non-white is one of our heroes, is what I was thinking the whole time.
Well, yeah, hell yeah.
And then Walter Hill was like, I hear you, Nate.
I'm going to make him a bad guy. So
don't you worry.
He's exactly the same as he was in Predator, except he gets to be a bad guy.
Oh, yeah. If you take that fucking guy who, like, made sense in the middle of the jungle where, like, special forces guys are just creating mass murders and just plop him in the middle of society.
Right.
He's still gonna be doing mass murders.
Right. And
that's a thing we keep picking up on in these Walter Hill movies. It's bad people. You put them in society, they're gonna keep doing bad things.
Yeah.
Bad things keep happening.
And Sonny Landham, he's got a presence in him in this movie. You talk about uneasiness. He's got that Mike Myers, Jason Voorhees appeal to him, like where you see him and you're like, oh god,
I was feeling
he's
gonna
do something bad.
Like I feel like that Coen Brothers shit going on in Fargo. I feel like they were throwing back to this where they had the chief just being that silent character who little fucking Steve Buscemi was partnering up with, and he was just like the violent one, the silent one. And I was like,
Peter Stormare?
Yeah, I feel no, not Peter Stormare. Just before that, where like the guy who just like had the shit going on in the car park and. It was literally just an Indian man again.
Cheap,
and I was just like, I feel like they're fucking taking this from 48 Hours.
Yeah.
Like, and I didn't really think about that until this most recent viewing of 48 Hours. I was like, yeah, I think they're taking a little bit out of 48 Hours for Fargo there. Just like having this character, this silent, just like, this guy's bad news.
Yeah.
Like he's going to stand there and he's going to be vigilant. And then like he snaps and then like, there's just violence happening.
Absolutely. James Remar, though, does a beautiful job as well. I read that he, before shooting his scenes, he wouldn't sleep the night before. just to
nuts.
Give himself a little extra edge.
I mean, it worked. It worked.
And
but
it
I don't
really
know if
does.
You really need to do all that.
That scene where
Walter Hill is really the only person giving you any work. So, like, you've got him in your pocket. Do you really need to be doing all this character actor shit on Walter Hill
I'm
movie?
I'm glad he did. Because that scene, like you talked about, they're in the hotel with the prostitutes, and the one's trying to talk to him, and he's watching a like 1960s kids cartoon, and just zoned the fuck out, and it is so believable, man. Like,
he's that dude who you see. I saw one of them just now, and I just left a bar. I'm not gonna name any names because you know this is a fucking public thing. But he's that guy who's just like such a fucking scumbag that like you know he's a scumbag.
Yeah,
and like, but he's always got some just dumb woman hanging around him, and he's just like, how does that woman not realize that he's got scumbag seeping out of every pore of his. So you just sit there and like watch her like throwing her life away, and you just watch him like being a scumbag, and you're just like, this is disgusting. And that's the whole vibe you get when you're seeing James Remar being the worst man, and you're seeing these fucking whores hanging around in these fucking hotel rooms with him, and you're seeing these shootouts happen, and you're seeing him be like, well, you're in front of the bullets before I am. Like, I'm using you to get out of here. And it's just like, this is the lowest dregs of society.
It's you or you, because they ain't getting me.
I'm really happy to be watching it, because this is what you need to get from action movies.
So they ice the cops, except for Nolte. Nolte gets away. They get away. Well, now we got something to deal with. Nolte goes back to the precinct. It's insane. Everything's going on. Everybody's yelling at him. They think he might be responsible for the cops getting killed. He's trying to tell
them
there's a lot of shit that went on that they didn't see. Pieces start getting together. They killed another guy in the park. Turns out he was an old gang member.
They just keep killing people and police over and over again.
So Nolte.
It seems like the entire squad of the entire fucking town or whatever would be like trying to hunt this guy down, but at no point does that happen.
No.
And the entire, it's just like Nick Nolte is the only person who's been put on the case to hunt these guys down.
Because he says to the captain, you know, give me a shot. Let me get this thing done.
Which brings me to my next bullet point. The screaming, angry police captain, which is a quintessential fucking touchstone of every buddy cop movie, and which... Unless you count, like, the angry mayor in Dirty Harry, who's not a police captain, got started here, and Frank McRae plays the screaming, and he's so good at it that he even goes on to reprise this role two times, like, parodying it. One in Loaded Weapon 1.
Hey, Dooley, give it a break, man.
What's going on?
Dooley here is better as he can escape in 15 minutes.
How long's he been at it?
3 days.
Better step on it, Dooley.
I want the York case.
There's no York case. It was a suicide. Copy?
No thanks.
Cappuccino? Espresso? Hey, Scotty! Can you get this machine to work?
I'm giving it all she's got, Captain. If I push it any harder, the whole thing will blow.
And two in fucking Last Action Hero.
Yes.
You slipped the bell on it, cut like it toes like a take from you. I got the California Ranger cousin doing an army of virgin on a dairy hand, Frank. Doing an army of virgin in my first sliver. Tiny Timber stepped on to the toilet.
You catch that?
You ball peen jackaminus. I'll slip the bell on it, cut second toes like a take from you. You know, you take the bag of the marriage with you. You're ready to get down the beach, go down the beach. You know, you take the chicken off the back, you stick it on. Well, see if this is clear enough. Give me your badge. And this time you won't get it back.
And, like, it's just, like, this was so good. Like, everybody knows the screaming fucking police captain, but more than that, they know this guy as the screaming police captain.
Right.
So mad at our heroes because they're so reckless and they've created so much damage. He fucking owned this role so hard in this movie that, like, anytime you're a parody, it wasn't just like, let's bring in like a fucking black guy with a mustache to do it. It was just like, no, we fucking need to get Frank McRae again. Like, we need to just actually have him in here screaming at our fucking cops.
When they first establish his character, one of my favorite lines happens. Nolte's, you know, taking fire from everybody as to what went down. He's getting a little pissed, this and that.
Mm-hmm.
And the captain just kind of comes through and he's like, Coates, you got to get to my office. Or Cates, that's his name, Jack Cates. Cates, you got to get in my office. Like, and he's yelling. He's not doing the full yell yet, but he's giving him like a stern, like, we need to talk, buddy. And then like Nolte's doing other shit. And he's like, did you hear me? And he's like, yeah, your voice tends to carry. It's just such a great little line. Like Nolte really kills it in this movie with like just subtle comments, like little jabs.
I mean, there's a lot of fucking alpha males in this shit yelling over each other, but Nolte's not going to be out alpha male. Like, he's going to be up there. He's going to fucking throw lines back and forth with anyone. This is maybe the best fucking Nolte role.
But he's got a lot of like great, like, fuck it, I don't really feel like dealing with this attitude at the same time. It's not just, you know, machismo, bravado, you know, dick measuring contest. Like, there's a good part of him that's just like, man, like, kind of like that Dante, like, I'm not even supposed to be here today kind of
feeling.
And
that's another one of my bullet points we're fucking moving into right here, whereas these early Nolte scenes. The first one, he shows up with a couple of cops who are in over their heads. They're not ready to deal with this shit. They die, he doesn't. The second scene, he's got a screaming fucking police chief, and he's like cavalier about it, and you're thinking like, this guy is fucking, he's the only one that knows what's happening. He's like the fucking best cop, all this fucking like red tape and shit is in his way, blah, blah, blah. But that gets completely subverted because he becomes dumber and dumber and like just like more of a despicable caveman throughout the, and like slower and slower you just realize like, oh, this guy's not a good cop at all. Like,
no.
This guy has no idea what he's doing. he's not the hero of this story. Like,
no.
This guy's a terrible cop. We just happen to be watching him. He's not the fucking hero. And that's so fucking Walter Hill. Because if there's anything we've been dealing with up to this point, it's just struggling with just like, which characters in any of these movies are the ones that we root for?
No one.
Which are the ones that we like? Which are the bad guys?
There are none. Well, occasionally there's a bad guy. Like.
Yeah, but that's where it gets to in this one. At first, you feel like Nick Nolte is that badass anti-hero who's like the one who's going against the system because he's the only guy who can get things done. But then, like, by the end of it, you're just like, this guy doesn't get fucking anything done.
No.
He doesn't know what he's doing. He's fucked up everything he's doing. Thank God he's got fucking Eddie Murphy's character next to him, like, salvaging everything he tried to, which we haven't even gotten to Eddie Murphy's character yet, but we'll get there in a second. But, like, and this is where the switch happens, because Eddie Murphy is a criminal, so it's just like, oh, what's going on? Is Eddie Murphy our new good guy? And we're switching it to like, oh, we like the criminal who he's forced to team up with, but we hate the cop. That's a nice subversion. But that's still not the thing, because Eddie Murphy's just a fucking poon hound fucking thief who was in
cares
it
about
for
his money,
own. And he's also not anything great, so we don't like him either. So we're in the midst of a fucking Walter Hill movie is where we are.
Nolte does the only bit of police work he does the entire movie. He figures out the one guy they killed was in a gang with these guys.
That's
so he finds out there's one more member of their gang that's still locked up, and that's Eddie Murphy.
Let's go talk to him.
So he's like, oh, let's see if he's got any answers.
Good luck. This guy hates his former gang members, is looking to get one over on them. There's some money out there in a suitcase he'd like to get his hands on before they do, so he's fully willing to cooperate. Nolte pulls some strings. We get our title because he's able to get this guy out of prison for 48 hours only, so now we got our gruff, miserable, incapable cop.
Don't forget, we get the iconic scene of Eddie Murphy singing Roxanne.
I'm here to see Reggie Hammond.
He's in 18. You want company?
No, thank you.
You don't have to put on the red light. Off the streets for money. You don't even care if it's wrong or if it's right. Work for money. You don't have to say about it to the night. Rocks, put on the red light. Rocks, put on the red light. Rocks, put on the red light.
In the jail cell.
Never forget that.
Nick Nolte rolls up.
That was in all the fucking trailers.
Like, I can remember as a fucking kid to day.
It's so funny that this guy's singing Roxanne, because that song is so famous right now, but also it's annoying. It's one of the most annoying songs ever written. Why does everybody like it so much? That guy's just pointing a mirror at us. He's pointing a mirror at all of us.
It's a great piece of comedy. Eddie Murphy was funny.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, this is the gruff fucking ostentatious, loudmouth, and like miserable, grumbly fucking curmudgeon buddy cop fucking thing that seems like a cliche now, but when this fucking movie came out in 1982, it was not a cliche. This is pretty much the first movie that did it, and it was so successful and everybody loved it so much that it was just like, I want to just keep doing what's in this movie.
Only other movie that did it before was Alan Arkin and
Freebie
and the Bean.
This is a little too much more of like an out there like gonzo thing, though. That movie's got its own thing going on, but it does have this sort of dynamic setup.
It's like the first case where you like really see that, whereas this kind of perfects what we grow to know as the begrudging buddy cop.
I mean, stay tuned. Yeah. We're talking to Freebie and the Bean because I do have that fucking penciled in for
We're doing stay tuned?
I have that for our cross-dressing villains month. Nice. I got that penciled in early. Because,
when are we doing stay tuned?
Oh, stay tuned the the Jack Tripper movie?
Yeah.
That's not an action movie. We're not doing that. Oh. We're not fucking doing that.
What about Mom and Dad Save the World or whatever?
We might do like an addendum talk about that because I do like that it has fucking, who's that Jewy comic? My favorite.
Who's that Jewy comic? He's my favorite.
That one movie. You're shitting on champagne.
Oh, John Lovitz. Yeah.
John Lovitz kills it.
You do love that guy. So Murphy's out of prison. They're working together. They don't like each other. Everybody calls it a buddy cop, and it laid the way for buddy cop movies.
Even though one of them is not a cop. We got a cop and a con, it's technically.
Like, and then the other side of that coin is they're not buddies either. They can't stand each other.
That takes me into another one of my
It's not a
points,
Murtaugh Riggs thing.
The absolute racism of this fucking movie.
Yeah.
Which is just like, not even just like looking back like, oh, they're doing things that we couldn't do today. Like, no. Even in the day.
Yeah.
Even in 1982, they are pushing the boundaries of how fucking racist you could have a main character, one of your protagonists, be and still just like try to float through the movie and have people get with you. It's fucking crazy.
Everything he says to Eddie Murphy in the first two thirds of the film is offensive.
Yeah.
And then after every two or three offensive things he says, he does a little something that shows, like, well, maybe he doesn't hate Eddie Murphy.
I mean, starting off with, it's just like when he says, "What are you smiling at, watermelon?"
Yeah.
Which is so racist that it's a racist thing that I've never even heard anyone say.
No.
Like, I understand, like, there's a fucking thing out there like, oh, black people like to eat watermelon. There's something racist about, but just flat out, like, you are watermelon.
Yeah.
What are you smiling at? Watermelon.
Yeah.
That's maybe the most racist thing that's ever been in a fucking movie. And it's not undercut immediately. It's just like, he just said that, moving on. To this point, it's still just set up that this is the main character of this movie. This is like our hero. This is the guy we're following. And it's just like, how the fuck am I gonna still be on board with this? Because even with 1982 standards, this is fucking disgusting.
Yeah. He's a racist son of a bitch. And Eddie Murphy, he doesn't like it, but he knows he's just stuck dealing with it. And so they go about their business. Eddie Murphy's trying to give him any leads he can think of. They're going this place and that place. And
well, they go all over the town, I'll tell you what.
They go to Torchy's, where Billy Bear used to work.
So then we get a lot of more racist stuff going on, because this is a quote-unquote cowboy bar, which I'll buy it, because we did have a rash of cowboy movies in the 80s, so I'll buy that in New York there probably was cowboy bars.
San Francisco, sir.
All right, sorry. Yeah, that's right. You think every movie is set in New York.
That's fair.
But yeah, this is a... I'll buy that there was fucking hillbilly bars in San Francisco in the early 80s because, goddamn, we were getting all these fucking movies about hillbillies. He walks in, he's like, "I'm a black guy. You can't believe it. You've never seen a black guy." And we just get just a litany of just racist comments over and over again. Just like, you're a black guy in a white bar, blah, blah, blah. And it really just makes me think, like, I understand that, like, racism was worse in the 80s.
Yeah.
But also, racism's got really bad recently, so I kind of thought we've gone back to where we were in the 80s, like in a post-Obama world where, like, a black guy as president triggered a lot of racists to just, like, get ballsy and start yelling, but it's just like,
that never should have happened.
Maybe it's still not that bad, because this movie was a huge hit in 1982, and, like, goddamn, it's just, like, sets up the idea that, like, a black guy can't go into a white bar or it's going to be insane. And everybody knows this so much that it's a comedic fucking thing.
Like, yeah, it's a comedic backdrop.
And they hang their hat on a lot of the shit that you're just gonna know. Like, a black guy in a fucking country western bar is inherently hilarious. You're gonna be laughing the whole time that he's just... There's no jokes. It's just a black guy walking through a country western bar, and we're supposed to be laughing, like, nonstop the whole time it happens.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's, like you said, it's putting a mirror up to society. You're supposed to laugh at the closed-mindedness and short-sightedness of people.
I think that's definitely what it's going for, but I think it worked on that level, like, when it came out.
Yeah.
Clearly, because it was a successful movie, people liked it. But right. I think, like, looking at it through modern eyes, like,
now
that mirror is no longer, like, a thing. It's just like, no, this mirror is no longer pointing back at me. This mirror is just pointing only at the filmmaker and being like, ugh, you had a lot of racist ideas, which I'm not going to hold against him. Fucking, like, just to throw that out there, like, I feel like we've gotten to a point where we talk about, like, anytime I read, like, a review of an old movie or whatever, we get 90% talking about how it holds up, like, standards wise with what we believe right now, and like 10% what a good film it was. And I want to fucking flip that. I want to be like 90% what a good fucking film it was, and then 10% like, also there was some racist shit in here, because come on, people, just fucking come on. What are you doing? Where are you trying to get? What is the end goal here?
You gotta
with what you're doing with policing the past. How do you police the past?
If you like all these old movies with like Bogart and shit, like, well, Bogart's a bad example, but like fucking
so woke.
Jimmy, what's his? Oh, hell, Jimmy. Jimmy Stewart. Like him and shit. Like, women are just made to look dumb in all those
Jesus
movies.
Jesus Christ. Like, they fucking treat women like not even objects, but just like fucking objects that will break if you touch them.
So,
that's not what we're doing
here.
You
keep peeling stuff back enough and everything looks bad. So just, like you said, judge it as a movie, and then you can put about 10% on what dating did to it. But Eddie Murphy, it's his big moment to shine here.
I mean, this is maybe the scene that made him a gigantic movie star. Just
absolutely.
Like the energy of him walking into this white room and just
holding everybody
it over
accountable
and like being like, I'm going to be in
all
charge.
All eyes on me, motherfucker.
Like, we're doing some fucking S&M shit here. Like, you're subversive. Like, I'm on top. Blah, blah, blah. And I mean, it works. He sells it. Like, Eddie Murphy's got a lot of charisma, and that's one of the things really, like, fucking just, like, makes the engine of this movie drive, man. Like, just Eddie Murphy's fucking charisma.
Yeah, against Nick Nolte's lack thereof.
Just, like, grumbling.
I'm angry.
This is the point where he's addressing the entire Kaiba bar, and he tells them all, like, I'm your worst nightmare, an N-word with a badge. And it's like, this is expertly fucking just parodied or homaged in the Burt Reynolds fucking beloved action comedy Cop and a Half, where the young black boy who he was partnered with is heard to remark, I'm your worst nightmare, an 8-year-old with a badge. That's how in the fucking, you know, the cultural fabric of the times this was, that like 15 years later, maybe, I don't know, I'm ballparking that. Don't Google it and fucking at me on Twitter. Like, they're still
don't
making,
at me, bro.
They're still making references to 48 Hours dialogue in fucking action parody fucking movies.
Even
that Burt Reynolds is in Cop and a Half, which I love. Don't talk shit about Cop and a Half. It's one of the funniest movies ever made.
Even in Die Hard 3, where racist drunk white cop gets put together with random black guy.
Uh-huh.
You know, go figure.
Sure.
But even in that movie, there's
a lot
the part
of great buddy cop tropes built into that fucking movie late into like the era where you were getting those.
I mean, this is mid 90s Die Hard 3 comes out.
I mean,
out.
Die Hard 3's got to be like 98, I feel like.
Yeah, it's mid to late 90s.
And that's got it.
They straight up rip off the line. Sam Jackson says to Bruce Willis, you know, we ain't partners, we ain't friends.
I think that's probably the last great buddy cop movie. Like, I can't think of another one after that.
Lethal Weapon 4 with Chris Rock.
Okay, Lethal Weapon 4 with Jet Li does not get... I legitimately, when I saw, like, there was a Best Buy going out of business, and I saw that they had the Lethal Weapon trilogy in a box set, like, that was on sale, and I bought it so that I could just have it without acknowledging that Lethal Weapon 4 existed. Not that I love Lethal Weapon 3, but, you know, I will acknowledge its existence, whereas 4, you can toss that down in the dirt and get rid of it. Another bit of dialogue I liked is, When Nick Nolte says, "You've been dicking me around since we started this turd hunt."
Yeah.
Which is just like...
Turd hunt.
Yeah, there's... I think maybe the back and forth in the dialogue in the script is one of the things that made this movie stand out from what was going on in the era. That just like... it seemed real. It seemed like two fucking despicable pieces of shit, like, who were talking shit to each other. And you didn't really get that in movies. You got more just like mannered, like, you know, writerly shit going on. Whereas this one was just like, I'm fully embracing slang. Everybody's talking like a moron.
Yeah.
There's not going to be any storyline where they like find a lead, then move on it and follow the clues. It's just like they luck into everything.
It's a
that
wild
happens.
Fucking goose
they
chase.
Keep lucking into fucking finding the fucking bad guys, and then it's like
keep fucking up.
The only time there's any sort of fucking conflict is when they accidentally stumble into where the bad guys are,
which they keep managing to do. But like you said, with the dialogue, it's just one racist thing after another. Just like every Walter Hill film. Don't worry, the homosexuals aren't safe either. There's a part where
we get the F word and the N word within 10 seconds of each other.
But we also get the more subtle dig of Murphy's talking about how he wants to get some trim. He's like, you know,
oh, he's talking a lot into how he wants to get some trim.
Or he wants to know about like the details of
trim, by the way, is just like, I'm going to fuck a woman, and she's obviously going to be willing to do it, because women are just out there, and you can have sex with them whenever you want to.
Yeah, that is definitely the tone they set in this
for,
film.
For fucking sure.
But there's a scene that he's trying to get details of Nick Nolte's love life, and he's like, oh, what do you want to know? He's like, I've been locked up with dudes for years. Like
3 years.
He's like, that ain't my scene, blah,
you
blah,
better
blah.
Believe it.
And to which Nolte's like, hey, you could have fooled me with those clothes you're wearing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's like, yeah, you like dudes.
The black man tends to dress more ostentatious than the white man. See, we're dealing around in a lot of race humor right here.
He essentially did the nice jacket. It makes you look like a homosexual.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I feel like back in 1982, that was legitimately a joke. And that's the type of thing where, like, now, like, it's not just offensive, but, like, you look at it and it's like, that's not even a joke. Like, there's no setup and punchline. Like,
yeah, no.
What you're doing there is not funny at all. That's not even a joke. Like, this ages so fucking poorly.
Yeah, but whatever. They get it together. They find the bad guys, they lose the bad guys. They find the bad guys, they lose the bad guys. They find the car, they got the money. It's at a garage, the same garage where Dalton's Mercedes is parked.
Yeah,
did you know that?
No,
it's the same exact parking garage in both movies. And when they finally get
where Patrick Swayze got his fucking New York car out of fucking Hawk to
correct
go out to work at the Double Deuce.
That's the one.
Oh, wow. Deep cut trivia.
Little bit.
That's
more.
That's what you listen to this for. It's little all bit more, this fucking knowledge right here.
A little more for you. The Porsche, Eddie Murphy's Porsche.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
When it shows up, Luther gets it free just so he can get the money.
David Patrick Kelly. Yeah.
License plate on it. That's the same license plate as Ryan O'Neal's brown Firebird.
Oh,
and Driver.
Yeah, that's a fun little throwback. I also like, too, that it's so absurd that, like, Luther's character goes there to pick up Eddie Murphy's old car that, like, they legitimately have to have Eddie Murphy's character be like, it makes no sense for any of them to just come here and pick up this car, but why don't we just go stake out in front of it in case one of them does? And it's like, and then they do. And then they just fucking do. And then, like, later on when, like, all of their fucking leads have, like, been fucking exhausted and they're just like, oh, God. You got to go back to jail. I got to go back to being a miserable cop. We haven't caught our criminals. But, like, remember how we learned earlier that one of them has a girlfriend? Let's just go to their girlfriend's house. And it's like, no. Like, that girlfriend doesn't even like them. It makes no sense. It's like, well. The plot needs us to go back to where they are so we can see them again. So let's just go back there. And it's like, you know what, other character? You're making sense. The plot does need us to be there. Let's fucking get there.
So
let's fucking get there.
We're going to get there because we could just keep talking. But it's just them losing these guys time after time after fucking time.
Mm-hmm.
So they're finally at the
they're
end of the
road. They're so sneaky, these criminals.
They're fine, but I like it. It's
I do too. Instead of it, I like the cat and mouse shit going on. There's not much fucking story going on. It's just like we're trying to catch these guys. These guys are trying to get away, and then we're gonna rely on the filmmaking to make the chase scenes fucking work. And Walter Hill's the filmmaker, so the chase scenes do work.
Chase scenes work. The fights work. All the violence and shit, even when it's over the top, it's all real. It's all raw. It's all the shit you love in the other Walter Hill movies where it's just guns getting shot, punches getting thrown. No over-the-top explosions or bullshit like that. Just practical, based in real life, violence. And it works so damn well. And I like it because it's not just the convenient. Everything gets tied up in a package like, well, there's the bad guys. Let's get the bad guys. Nothing, hey, we got the bad guys.
Even though they do that thing where everybody gets tied up in the same location, still nothing gets tied up like in this movie. Like nobody has a happy ending. Like it doesn't work out for anyone. It's
what,
like
one of the things you were saying at the very beginning when you were poo-pooing Annette O'Toole's character. My understanding, they wrote a lot more for her in the original script,
sure.
And then Walter Hill was just like, she's a woman, what do I need with her?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just going to make, you know,
he managed
jokes.
To have a lot of scenes where she was prancing around just in a towel, that's for sure. Yeah.
So, one of the things I really, really love is that I like her being in this movie because it represents the last bit of humanity that Nick Nolte's character has.
Every once in a while, like it reminds us, like this guy's got a life that he could be going back to, and he just fucking doesn't.
And he tries, and like you can't really tell, does he care or is he just trying because he knows he should as a human being if he wants to claim to be one? But I like the fact that she just kind of goes into the night, and there's no Hollywood ending where it's just like, it all worked out. And her character's just kind of an afterthought.
And I think that's very appropriate because the actual romantic relationship that we are building up through this is the relationship between Eddie Murphy and Nick Nolte. And it's building up. They do the racist shit where it's just like, I just think you're a fucking N-word criminal, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, I've got some things going on too, though, that's not too different from what you're doing, blah, blah, blah. And we all build, like, throughout the movie, like, we get to the point where these guys, in classic buddy cop fashion, like, Nick Nolte realizes just like, the guy who's the opposite of me is actually like me, and like, we're going to do this together. We're going to hang out.
Yeah.
And he actually, there's a scene where he apologizes for the N-word, the watermelon.
Yeah.
These things that he said earlier, I was like, I can't believe he's saying that.
Right.
He brings it up like just like, he says it. He's like, I apologize for fucking saying that. And I'm like, yeah, that's not quite enough. I don't quite fucking buy it. But it does bring us into our third act, like the end of it, where like they both failed, like the 48 hours is done.
Yeah.
Murphy's got to go back to jail. Fucking like Nick Nolte looks like an idiot because he pulled all these strings to try and solve this case and he didn't. And they're just like, let's do this one last thing. We know that he had a girlfriend here. Let's just see if they're at his fucking girlfriend's house, fucking blah, blah, blah. And they go there, and he is there. And then we get one final shootout.
Yeah. The big shootout.
The big shootout. But, like, it ends in a scene where, like, the bad guy, James Remar, is like a... I don't know. I'd be remiss to not acknowledge that there's... It's also another scene that's very, very fucking tense.
Oh,
if there's anything that separates this from other fucking buddy cop movies that are, like, more focused on fun action or, like, you know, comedy action, is this, like... When things are going on in here, they're like, they're going to get violent. He milks all the tension out of it. Like,
yeah.
That early scene where the fucking truck's rolling up to the fucking chain gang. Like, yeah. You keep cutting back and forth, and you know something's bad's going to happen. That shootout in the fucking hotel where it's just like a... Nolte has got his gun on Remar. Remar's got his gun on the fucking limp dick cop.
It keeps
going back and fucking forth. And fucking forth.
The editing
is a thing that's fucking just like should be praised here.
All the violence and everything, like I said, is all real life based.
Yeah.
I worked in a jail. There was thousands of fights.
Boy,
there.
Boy, did you.
We go to the bars constantly.
Also, a lot of diseases.
That's true, too. We go to bars a lot. We see fights there a lot.
Gross.
And no matter what, when it comes to violence, when it comes to this, there's always that feeling in there. You sense it coming.
It's
hostilities, tension.
What it is that spaghetti Western fucking moment where you just wait and it's back and forth.
Is this going sideways?
You look at this guy's eyelid. You look at that guy's eyelid. And a lot of action movies don't do this, but 48 Hours fucking does it. It's spaghetti Western in its fucking editing. And you get a lot of this in this last fucking showdown where they go to James Remar's girlfriend's fucking house, and it's in Chinatown, and they're there, and they hop through the fucking fire escape, and...
Well, Billy just gets shot down with a knife in his hand and shirtless as usual.
But then we get like a scene in the fucking fog-filled back alleys of
Eddie Murphy and Nick Nolte are both trying to find James Remar.
We're creeping through the alleys. He's there. We're there. We're there. And the editing goes back and forth, and it lets us sit in the moment and lets us wait. It's not just like, where's the next thrill? Where's the next like high-octane thing? It's just like, no. Let you sit here and wait at the edge of your seat because it's the anticipation that's better more than like the actual when gunshots keep like fucking going off and whatnot.
Yeah.
And that's what this movie does really well. And that's what happens in the last fucking scene here.
It's all foggy. It's terrifying. It's like, don't go in there. Ah, you gotta go in there. Maybe they're gonna find, they can't work together. And Remar, he's got the drop on him. He's too far in front of him. Eddie Murphy's getting close on the trail, but Remar's behind that little gate, and he can see Murphy. Murphy can't see him. Bam, he gets the drop on Murphy. And he's like, well, I'm going to use him as a pawn. He's not enough. I need to take care
of that
cop, too.
Yeah.
So he brings he's like, hey, Nolte, you know, I got your convict, your buddy. Nolte shows up, all fucking business. Another thing we didn't fucking mention, the fucking screen presence that Nick Nolte has in this movie.
Nick Nolte
every time
brings weight to everything he does.
Every time they
I'm a
have
Nick Nolte fan.
Yeah, every time they have to present like how much of a hoss he is, it's fucking executed to a T. They frame him up perfectly to just fill every inch of the screen, just fucking height and shoulders, and just goddamn, like he calls Nick Nolte out. And you know immediately, because the way he just comes out of the fog, you're like, oh, dude, you made a mistake. You shouldn't have called him out like that. You know it's going down.
And I feel like in this moment, this is the last bullet point I've been building to. I feel like this is the ultimate Walter Hill fucking moment. We've got a moment where James Remar's in the fog. He's got fucking Eddie Murphy, who's a criminal who we've learned to love, but he's got a gun to his head, and he's like, don't fucking fire, or I will shoot him. Nick Nolte's got his gun trained. Nick Nolte's a racist motherfucker, thinks of this guy as less of a human, just like he's just a fucking convict, and he's just like, you can't shoot, like, this guy's fucking life is on the line, and Nick Nolte doesn't hesitate. He just blows James Remar's fucking head off, and like fucking even Eddie Murphy is like, he's shocked. He's like, oh, I can't believe you shot him. But
well, Eddie Murphy does go, don't listen to him, man. Just take the shot.
Yeah, yeah, but he. That's Eddie Murphy's fucking, you know, like fucking
bluffing. Yeah,
he's bluffing. Yeah. He's speaking. He doesn't realize that's just. But we know we're in a Walter Hill movie because he fucking does. Because this is our hero. This is our protagonist. But we realize the whole movie, there's been a push and pull, a back and forth. Does he see him as a real human being, or is he just a racist cop who sees him as a fucking animal, sees him as a convict, and in the last moment where he is forced to choose between those things, you realize, oh no, he does just see him as a fucking convict animal. He doesn't care if he dies, so he's going to take the shot. And he takes the shot and he gets it, and James Remar dies, and Eddie Murphy is free, but you're still sitting there with Nick Nolte didn't fucking care. We've watched a whole fucking movie is about two guys partnering up and getting together, but when push came to shove, he didn't fucking care about him. His life meant nothing to him. He was still willing to take the shot, and it was just fucking like business. It was all fucking business.
Or did he care?
No, because the last time
when James Remar had a gun to somebody and Nick Nolte decided, okay, I'll listen to you.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you my gun. I'm not going to do this. What happened? Old boy got killed anyway.
He learned his lesson.
So Nick Nolte knew.
He got blown away in that hotel scene early on.
Nick Nolte said, like, yeah, I care about Eddie Murphy, but if I put my gun down, he's going to kill Eddie Murphy anyways. I know that. The only chance I got is to just fucking take
the
shot.
That's the thing. You just do what's smart. You can't think about the humanity of the situation. The world is a terrible place. You just have to live in the world, which is the Walter Hill fucking just like, that's what he believes.
It's the
ultimate.
That's
what he believes.
Nolte knew Remar would kill regardless.
Mm-hmm.
And Nolte knew it had nothing to do with personal feelings. The only way he was going to get Remar was to just take the fucking shot.
We've watched four Walter Hill movies at this point. I mean, that's what's coming along. It's just like, no matter what stance you take, I'm going to be a good guy, I'm going to be a bad guy, I'm going to believe this, I'm going to believe that. The world doesn't fucking care. Like, the world doesn't believe in morality. So, like, you're dead. Just do the smart thing, or you're dead.
Amen, brother.
So, let's take a break and then come back for Judgment Day.
Yeah, we'll get more booze. Don't worry.
I've come here to create chaos and anarchy.
A brilliant bomber doesn't just take out his target. He takes out everything his target loves.
Your new wife and daughter just got home.
You're a sick freak!
Jeff Bridges, Academy Award winner Tommy Lee Jones.
This is for your lovely wife.
Blown Away, rated R. Now playing at theaters everywhere.
Experience the wildest thrill ride of the year. A white-knuckle action adventure. It's the adrenaline rush of the summer. Pure high-energy excitement. Hang on for the ultimate adventure. Cliffhanger, rated R. Starts Friday, May 28th at a theater near you.
One thing I know, no matter how full I am, if I'm wasted and you show up with movie theater popcorn, I'm going to run a fucking train on it.
Sure. And by
I did.
By you, you mean your fiance, because I would never do that. But if your fiance did bring you movie theater popcorn to eat, like that did keep you awake for like another 15 minutes in the midst of our Joe Bob, how rednecks fucking saved Hollywood thing. I mean, I made it all the way through the end, but you guys, whew, she literally had to go to the back of the room and sleep. Like,
I don't know if she was asleep or not.
No, she was fully asleep. We had to We didn't even know she was back there. We found her and had to shake her awake, you remember?
No, she space-hogged
it. You were too drunk to even remember us finding her and shaking her awake.
No, I do remember that.
It was a disaster.
We were walking towards the back, and there she was, just to the right of us.
There she goes. Okay, let's get into Judgment Day. We're talking about the last movie in our four-movie Walter Hill fucking thing. Up to this point, we've had the same judgments, man, on like three Walter Hill movies.
Yeah.
We've given them the same bullet ratings, which is fucking crazy.
Yeah.
That's fucking crazy. That shit should not happen. I know we're copacetic. We're like
We're friends for a reason.
We're hosting a podcast together, so we've got some... But the exact same bullet rating? That's fucking... Bullet ratings are things that people have talked about for years, and they're very nuanced, and they're fucking... I don't know. I got very drunk early today because I had a 1 week late Father's Day lunch with my dad, which just got parlayed into a drunken afternoon with a couple of people who are scumbags, which then got parlayed into like me just having to come back here and record this. So I was just sort of like a haphazardly pulling some fucking reviews together for a Judgment Day, but I do have enough reviews there for a Judgment Day.
Any wildebeest?
No wildebeest. I mean, like you had wildebeest thing pulled up last week, so we're gonna know from this point on when there's a wildebeest coming up.
I think we only got one left.
Might be some other superstars out there on
I know.
IMDb, though, so let's check it out. So just,
you know how much
let's get into
how quick
these
I am to fall in
one
love.
Bullet ratings of people who hated fucking 48 Hours. This one is a one bullet rating.
I liked the movie when it was real racist, but then I didn't like the end of it when he gave that colored man a second chance.
That's not really what goes on. But this is a one bullet review from Letterboxd user Round By My Way.
Round By My
They say, a buddy cop movie where I guess the makers couldn't conceive of Eddie Murphy being a cop, so they made him a convict. He is let out of jail on very, very tenuous circumstances to find a cop killer he hardly seems to know. When I say cop killer, I mean this dude in his court have killed multiple cops in multiple places. Despite this, the police force assigns one detective, played by, known for his competence or sobriety... If there were people going specifically after cops, you can bet there would be multiple precincts in SWAT gear, snipers, and you name it, tearing apart every known location in town looking for these guys. I mean, there was an ellipsis, but then the ellipsis just went in another sentence and never ended.
I got angry, huh?
The film is a 90-minute excuse to get Murphy and Nolte to trade barbs with one another, except Nolte's barbs are called Murphy Watermelon, Spear Chucker, and the N-word multiple times. At one point, he sends Murphy to a, quote-unquote, redneck bar to find the location of the assailant. Confederate flags hang everywhere.
He doesn't send Murphy there. Murphy takes them there.
And as the pair walk in, as Nolte is smirking at how much fun this will be watching Murphy squirm, the whole thing isn't funny or ironic. It's demoralizing. The entire film goes on like this. If I were Eddie Murphy, I'd have made a pact with myself to make enough money to get out of white movies and cast myself as every character in my own films, too. One bullet or... I mean, it sounded like nonsense until that end, and I was like, oh yeah, Eddie Murphy might have found something out.
I need to unpack a few things from that one right there. First of all, I need to apologize because I went after the super conservative right-wing racists, and that was unfair of me. Clearly came from the ultra-liberal left-wing that was like, shame on you for being racist. Boo, 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 boo.
That's them.
So that's my
right.
That's my fault. Second,
you should be fired from all of your jobs.
All of them.
They won't rest until you are.
Second, Eddie Murphy made $450,000 for this movie.
Oh, fuck, that's
Nick
a great
Nolte
little thing to drop.
Made $1 million for this movie. Mm. 8 years later.
God, that's racist as fuck.
8 years later.
Yeah.
In 48 Hours 2, Nick Nolte made $3 million.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie Murphy made $7 million.
Ooh,
so,
that's a fucking, you know, like, that's a little bit of a win.
Things worked out. Things worked out okay. We didn't do budget on this one. Did you catch a budget and what they finished?
For some reason, I didn't. For that some reason, it was because when I was putting this together, I was fucking halfway drunk this afternoon wasted. Going together. So,
give me another
really
review and I'll look up some budgets.
Well, this next one bullet review is from Letterboxd user Patrick. He says, Nick Nolte is a tough and out-of-control cop who springs a con to help him locate two serial killers who've already killed at least five guys. These two are mismatched buddies in a buddy film. Back in 1982, 48 Hours made a ton of money and was a surprise hit and helped make Eddie Murphy a big star. However, when I see it today, I sure wonder what folks saw in it. It just comes off... Sure, wonder what folks are a very nasty film.
Got that?
Yeah, this is a lot of nonsense. Full of racial epithets, nudity, F-bombs. FYI, MIDB wouldn't let me or anyone use this word in a review. The F-bomb. They mean the fuck word, I think. You can say fuck, though, I think. And violence. And to me, it seemed like most of this was to put the film just to offend, as if somehow made the film edgy and hip. Well, to me, it just seems nasty and unappealing. To make it worse, much of the film consists of really, really bad dialogue, ridiculous police behaviors, with Nolte's character, the Bill of Rights simply don't exist. That's also another parenthetical, aside. Mm-hmm. Guns that never need reloading, and so much macho posturing that I felt like puking. And this is actually a 1.5 bullet review. And,
yeah, close enough.
Martin Hader from IMDb. I couldn't find another one bullet review that I really liked, so I did this other one bullet review. This is very short from Letterboxd user Patrick. It's just a racist white man solves racism again. Thank you, racist white man.
Wait, what was it?
Patrick, one bullet.
A racist
white man solves racism again. Thank you, racist white man.
Solves racism again?
That's right. One bullet from Patrick. I feel like Patrick's getting at something.
Patrick
getting at some fucking truths that we don't want to fucking dig into.
Patrick, email us. We need to talk, buddy. The other review talked about the F word.
Mm-hmm. The fuck word.
They say fuck.
No, not the fuck word. The F word we don't say.
I think he's meant the fuck word, though.
Oh,
either way,
that's despicable. I'll say fuck.
We say it all the time.
All the time. Hey, it's the other one I won't say.
Hey, the word fuck.
Yeah.
Or its derivatives are used in this movie.
Yeah.
48 times.
That's a fun little fucking trivia thing.
Yeah.
This is a very offensive movie.
I got the grosses if you want to know.
Oh yeah, pull that all shit out. Pull that all shit out.
How much do you think it cost to make this movie in 1982?
I don't know, negative $2 million because they all spent enough money in the swear jar.
I see what you did there.
Yeah.
We laid out how much the performers were paid.
Uh-huh.
$12 million was the budget.
$12 million for the budget.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Opening weekend, what do you think it pulled in?
$46
million?
No. No, I was so wrong.
$4 million. $369,868.
I'm doing it for modern times. So I don't know. I'm too drunk to do
it. It made a quarter of its money
back.
It was
good. It was good
weekend.
Enough. Of course, because there's another 48 hours.
Right.
Which we're going to do another Walter Hill marathon a year from now. But spoiler alert, we're not going to do another 48 hours. Fuck another 48 hours.
Well, there's that.
It's not even in there.
It grossed altogether $78 million.
Enough to get everybody a paycheck, apparently.
Yeah.
Good God damn it.
78, almost 79.
Give us some five.
The other side of the fucking thing, we got some five bullet reviews. People loved it. This next one is from Letterboxd user Mark Lewis, who says, "What Goodfellas is to Scorsese, what Heat is to Mann, what The Wild Bunch is to Peckinpah. 48 Hours is to Walter Hill. The film that encapsulates every theme, interest, and concept that the director cares about in Hill's case. That means hyper-masculinity with a moral code, excessive profanity, gallows humor, terribly written female characters, and well-executed small-scale action scenes. all of Hill's films have these, but this is the one where they all come together in the most focused fashion. Five bullets from Mark Lewis. I can't fucking argue with that. That man makes a good fucking argument. Yeah. I got one more five bullet review from Amazon user PR Guy, which sounds... Is that suspicious? Because if you were just a PR person from the fucking studio, would you call yourself PR Guy? No, I don't know. Bro, okay, so
bro, he's Puerto Rican.
Too smart for us.
He's Puerto Rican.
PR Guy's something else. He's a Puerto Rican man. He says, it took me 28 years to finally watch 48 Hours, and I have nothing but kudos to share
on this
film. I'm
not going to do it.
Film.
I'm just not going to. All right, 28 years later,
that
fuck it, I'm doing it. That
is the test of time. I bet I'm the only one that hadn't seen this when it first released in 1982. Nick Nolte and Eddie Murphy are superb as a cop-slash-convict duo on the heels of an excessive... of an escapees and an accomplices trying to track down a $500,000 prize in, quotes, dirty money. To track down a $500,000 prize. Once again, dirty money. I believe this is Eddie Murphy's final film. Or first film. Yeah. I believe this is his first film. Obviously, it wasn't his last. No, that's obvious. There's plenty of action, wry humor, and a great cat and mouse chase. A great cat and mouse chase.
There you go.
I mean...
Is he writing bad or are you reading bad?
This is the first time where I'm reading bad. This is funny. I want to call me out for this because, like, half of it is me trying to acknowledge how bad he's writing, but the other half is me also reading bad. So, yeah. Like, don't think bad about this person because I'm also drunken now. There's plenty of action, right humor, and a great cat and mouse chase through the streets of San Francisco. It's a classic crime drama that hasn't gone stale. The verbal exchanges between Nolte and Murphy are profane, but unlike many films of today, it was necessary in the script between a dirty cop and a dirty convict. Hmm. And music lovers will enjoy the nightclub performance of the band The Bus Boys and their rendition of The Boys Are Back in Town. All five stars. Five stars from Amazon user PR Guy. He did a great job of
writing words.
Like making a PR fucking thing to make this not sound like a hateful movie.
Yeah. Yeah. But we ain't gonna wait. He's no Puerto Rican. Road. We get ready to rock and guys, roll. He's seen enough.
They've got no scruples. No, everybody knows that.
What does that mean?
That's not even a thing. Everybody knows that. Let's get into your fucking...
Yeah, we should.
Let's get into your fucking final thoughts and your fucking...
It's our...
Your rating.
It's our final fucking Walter Hill movie.
Oh,
I want somebody...
Until next year. Count, get ready.
Count the fucks we've used in this episode. Maybe it's 48. Maybe it's 98.
A lot of the F words.
Again, we're the Deadwood of podcasts. This film right here does so many goddamn things right. It's Walter Hill. That one guy said, and he was right. It's Walter Hill at his finest. What we've talked about since day one is shades of gray. Mm-hmm. Walter Hill doesn't like to give you the good guy, the bad guy. I mean, he'll give you bad guys, but he doesn't like to be like, this character's this, this character's that. He just shows you, hey, here's what this character is like.
Except in the Warriors series, like, love racists. Love racists.
Yeah, that one.
Love people, love rapists.
Swing and a miss. This one does not swing and miss. These are fully fleshed out characters. You get a good sense of their moral code, what they believe in, and everything in between.
And it's important.
It sure is. I'm glad that PR man brought it up. Because I was going to talk about it.
Because fucking Wildebeest couldn't. Because
Wildebeest,
like,
couldn't. We're calling
break.
You out, punk.
Yeah, we're calling you out.
The Bus Boys, man. You know I love me some music.
Mm-hmm.
You know I love the fact when you can work the, like, main song from your trailer into your fucking
Such
movie.
A great fucking soundtrack.
Little background here. The Bus Boys were Eddie Murphy's band that he toured with.
They're his version of fucking Stallone's brothers, fireside,
yeah.
trash
Take
can band.
So
he's their Valentine's.
When Eddie Murphy's doing Raw and Delirious, his opening act was the Bus Boys. So he got him in the movie. They provide the song that's in the theme song or in the trailers.
Oh, He's such a hard-hearted nothing to everybody who says he won't clown for SNL reunions. Yeah. He got everybody he's related to a fucking paying gig. Yeah. Think about it.
Care of people, man. And you know I love when you got a great fucking song and you can work it in there, and the soundtrack itself is great. It's so good. It was used again in Commando. Mm-hmm. A lot of shit clicks here. Like you said, Annette O'Toole.
I wish I could have seen more of her body. Though.
That storyline.
Just got little glimpses.
And that's what I want to talk about. She should have been naked. Other people were naked. Opportunity missed there.
Yeah,
they got
a lot of naked whores.
They dropped
all those whores got
whores.
Naked. But no, nobody was legitimately dating anybody we saw naked, which is... Oh, this is confusing to me in a moral thing. Walter Hill, what do you believe about women?
They definitely shoehorned in that storyline. And like I said,
it's got no business.
To me, though, they really lucked out because it worked out in expressing Nick Nolte's string of humanity.
Nick Nolte is a despicable person,
it
obviously.
It works in that sense. Another opportunity missed, the very beginning of the movie, when they're showing Annette and Nick Nolte for the first time.
That's right.
Clearly,
my first boner.
Clearly, you could have shown Annette's titties right there.
Yes, absolutely.
And another thing.
Absolutely.
If you're going to do 80s action right, you get Nick Nolte up out of that bed, which they did, but you pan down.
Nolte ass.
And you show that man
get
ass.
Those buns. Get
Don't
those
be afraid.
Buns in there.
But fucking, Walter Hill.
What are you thinking?
Walter Hill.
He's no fan of buns.
He's afraid
are
of
Are we going to hold that against him?
He's afraid of his own homosexual ideas and
Clearly.
Thoughts.
Clearly.
He's very uncomfortable by this. And it's the one thing that drives this away from being a perfect film. And that's why I'm giving it 4.5 bullets.
4.5 bullets.
It's
you
a
fucking
God
love this movie.
Damn solid film.
You love this fucking movie. Okay, I think this movie is a good movie. I think it's talked about more, though, than it should be because of its reputation, because it established so many different fucking archetypes that every buddy cop movie after this did. That doesn't mean I don't love it. And it combined the focused storytelling of the driver with the focus on characters of the Long Riders.
Mm-hmm.
And then it doesn't alienate you the way the Warriors did. So it's the best of Walter Hill.
It's not the Warriors.
I feel it's the best of Walter Hill. It's like, it's clean, it gets you in and out, but like it lets you know its characters. So I think it's a solid, good fucking movie. And it's a fucking... Man, I don't like the characters. I don't think there's anything clever going on in the dialogue.
You're not supposed to like any of his characters.
But also, I don't think there's a scene that's like a standout scene that's like, holy shit, that scene. Do you remember that scene from 48 Hours?
Yeah, that's
Which is the thing that lowers it a bit for me, where there's no one scene where you're like, fuck, they fucking did that scene and they pulled it off. That's why I think it's a solid, good movie. 4 bullets. I give it 4 bullets.
Ooh, we finally...
This is the last week.
We finally had a difference in opinion.
It's so slight.
I think you got drunk and changed your review a half a bullet.
You can fucking see it. I always write them down. Look at it right now. It's on my fucking thing. 4 bullets.
I don't know what you were doing when I was talking.
He's lying that he is not looking at it right now.
It's there. We just missed out on a clean sweep. But that's not what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just people having ideas.
Next week's the 4th of July. It's America's Day. So we need to absolutely talk about the greatest American movie ever made. What's that, Matt?
Oh, man. Does it have a U2 soundtrack?
I mean, if you're going to make an American movie, you got to have a fucking U2 soundtrack with the Bono and the Edge.
Maybe you get two generations of actors.
Get ready for shit, man. We've got all of the bridges in here.
Man, oh, God, maybe you throw in another guy.
4th of July, it's so fun.
Maybe another guy that's only looked young in one movie. Maybe like a Tommy Lee Jones.
Never looked young.
He looked kind of young.
Still the oldest guy
in Rolling Thunder,
though.
We're talking probably Baby Oil and Blow's favorite movie of all time, Blown Away. And it's coming next week. Baby Oil and Blow.
Stay single.
It's a long road And it hurts when they tear your dreams apart. And every new town just seems to bring you down. Trying to find peace of mind can break your heart. It's a use a friend.